Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast. And up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey everybody, this episode of James Bonding is brought to you by Squarespace. It's me, Matt. Matt Gourley right now is on assignment on a special beach somewhere. Actually, he's in the Alps. But he's on this episode, but he's not here while I'm recording this ad. But I know that if he was here, he would agree 100% with the following. A dream is just a great idea that doesn't have a website yet. You can make it a reality with Squarespace. Squarespace makes it easy to turn your idea into a unique website, showcase your work, blog, or publish content, even sell products and services of all kinds in just a few clicks. It's got 24/7 award-winning customer support, so you can customize everything from the look and the feel and the settings and the products using beautiful templates created by world-class designers, and there's nothing to install or patch or upgrade ever. That's right. You don't need a whole Q branch full of gadgets to get your website up and running, because Squarespace will do it all for you. You can head to squarespace.com/bond. for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, you can use the offer code BOND and save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. So if you're looking to make a website for your fictional import-export business that is your cover for every assignment you go on, just like James Bond, there's no better place to do that than Squarespace. So go to squarespace.com/bond. Here's the show.
James Bonding Podcast. With Matthews, Myra, and Gourley. Matthews, Gourley, and Myra Podcast.
James Bonding is back. And better for it.
Better forever?
And better forever. He's no longer not better. My name is Matt Gourley.
I'm Matt Myra.
And today, back for a second week in a row, is our man in the East, Phil Nobile Jr.
Gentlemen, how are you?
We're so good. And we're glad you're back, even though we're recording this one first. It's a bit of a time warp.
Oh, got it.
So
we'll do all our pleasant
We should do callback jokes. In reverse. Okay, hang on.
We should set up some callback jokes.
I'm going to reference something that I will reference later on in our day, but to the listener will be something that we... Boy, this is tough. It'll happen. Don't
Let's
worry.
All make a callback right now to last week's episode and see if we did it. Well, we can force it in.
Oh, yeah. We could. Certainly.
Yeah. That's not the baloney kingdom I remember.
That's a chip off the old honky tonk.
And that's why we have eyebrows.
Okay, we've got our work cut out. But for today, it's all about live and let die. 1973, Roger Moore's first
foray into the Bond franchise.
That's right.
As James Bond.
I was watching this and Amanda comes in.
Still a saint.
Sits down and goes, you know, he's pretty good looking. And Roger Moore is good looking.
It's as good looking as he's going to get in the franchise.
That's right.
You think this is his peak good lookingness?
Yeah.
I think he's healthy, he's engaged, and he's being photographed probably better than he is in the next couple of movies.
And we know he's doing his knees bend workout because he writes about it in the making of this film in that book.
He is rocking serious kidney stones all through the making of this movie, by
That's
the way.
Right.
Well, he's just not drinking enough water.
Think about that.
And he's mad because he can't have his hair cutter come along, right?
His hairdresser.
Hairdresser. Right.
His hairdresser was not hired as was promised, and he flung his breakfast toast across the room and raged. All right. While we're on the subject of that, on the subject of that book, I don't know if you guys talked about this on the thing, but it's being re-released in hardcover in October. And I am as sure as I am of anything that we are responsible for that.
You are responsible for that. Well, we are merely
the amplifier for your voice.
I think you're right. I think you're probably right. And shouldn't they reach out to us to do a three-person forward?
I think they should, if they were gentlemen.
What is going on, guys? This is happening. Desmond Llewellyn's hands are being Googled at a rate not seen ever.
What's happening? And I don't want to I don't want to rattle you guys, but you know your lover's not experts, credo.
Yeah.
I think you're becoming experts.
No, as a fan.
And I don't think you have a lot of fans on the show. I think I'm the one fan you keep bringing onto the show. I'm listening every episode. You guys are becoming experts.
Well, coming from you, that's high praise, but I beg to differ.
You'll know that you're experts when you fucking hate it.
Well, then I am not an expert. Live and Let Die last night. Do you guys ever have this? Let me ask you about this. Because now James Bond is kind of like, I don't want to call it a job because there's no drudgery involved. I enjoy it, but it is this thing we have to do weekly. So it's a set thing.
Yeah.
So when I watch it, I am now watching in that context. But last night I got a Live and Let Die flash of like when I was a kid watching this movie. And that was a feeling I haven't felt in a while because I still enjoy it. But I'm watching it in current day mode.
Yeah.
And I'd forgotten about all the nostalgia that goes with this. And like, if you put Bond on the shelf for a year or two and come back to it, that's the first feeling you get.
Yeah.
And even though I've seen this movie very recently, I flash back. This was the first DVD I ever bought.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And also we should mention this will come out close to May, and it's almost a year since the death of our boy Roger Moore.
Mm-hmm.
May 23rd, he died.
Isn't that what we
birthday.
Came back with?
With me.
Yeah, that's right.
We all talked Roger, and we talked about the book, and I think,
obviously, this book is why. We are why.
And it's appropriate. And I think we landed on Live and Let Die as our collective favorite of his at that time.
Yeah.
And here we are looking at these great Live and Let Die stunt spectacular prints by Matt Gourley.
By Matt Gourley. They hired him when he was about 6 years old draw this.
I was zero. I was born.
Yep. Well, took them a little while to get the licensing, they were like, well, we got to do a poster.
I know
a young man in Long Beach.
Wait a year, Matt.
I'm sorry. I keep forgetting you're from the least memorable place in Southern California.
It is so memorable that even John Greenleaf Whittier had never been there. They just named it after him, apparently.
But clearly this movie made a mark on the three of us in a way that the collective opinion doesn't value the movie.
Yeah.
Ripening? Is it becoming? Is it just that there's when you get to the sameness of some of his franchise, this one stands out so much?
Boy, it really does. And is it the blaxploitation thing? It's one of those outliers, and I love the Bond outliers. And I actually think this is as close to good as an outlier gets, maybe.
Sure.
With the exception of On Her Majesty's Secret
Service. So something that can still be an outlier. That is an outlier, but can still be a good movie.
Yeah, most of the outliers are good because they're so bad.
Yes.
Like Diamonds Are Forever or View to a Kill or something.
Well, it depends on what your definition of outlier is.
Because
License to Kill is a bit of an outlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quantum's a bit of an outlier.
That's true.
Yeah.
I
don't know if Connery has an outlier.
I don't think of Quantum as an outlier. I think of Quantum as the post-credit sequence for Casino Royale. It just happens to be 2.5 hours and cost $170 million.
I think Connery, Diamonds Are Forever, is a bit of an outlier of his,
just in terms of the logistics of how that came to be.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, let's get into this film, huh?
You got your notes?
God, I love this thing.
Do we ever live and let notes?
I wrote notes.
Because I've seen this movie. This is probably in my top five of the Bond that I've seen the most. This is one of the ones I used to put on all the time. It's why it was the first DVD one I bought for some reason. I really watched the background a lot in this one, and already right out of the gate noticed some things about Bond's kitchen that goes beyond that espresso maker or whatever it is he has. But his fridge is tiny. Do you guys notice the size of his refrigerator? And I'm sure that was probably a common thing in England at the time, but it's like the size of it's like the size of a Casper mattress box that comes in the size of a small refrigerator. And he has rooster jello molds hanging up in his kitchen.
He does have a real country theme going there, and
or
some
bundt
of this stuff.
cakes.
It's
I think that the they're Jell-O molds, right? They are the rooster Jell-O, the copper.
I guess
rooster
they could
Jell-O
be cake molds,
which I feel like was on every kitchen wall.
Yeah,
from I don't know the invention of copper until 1988.
The invention of kitchens.
I mean, I'm familiar with the sort of the rooster imagery in kitchens. I did not ever assume it was a Jell-O mold.
It's probably
I always
a cake
thought it was.
Thing.
I think it's probably it was a Jell-O.
No, you guys both thought.
I just pretended in my mind. Well, you know,
it's got to be a cake thing.
It's got to be, right?
Yeah.
Is he cooking anything besides that fucking cappuccino, though?
Yeah, just quiche.
You know what? This is the first time I noticed that he actually grinds the beans himself.
Oh, yeah.
That's what that big machine is. It's solely a grinder, right?
Because
the espresso thing is separate.
That is insane how big the
grinder
is at that point.
That's crazy. Yeah. It had to be some kind of like industrial steel motor.
I also want to know what goes on at M's. Maybe, you know what? Here's my guess. M has one of these machines, but he's never seen it because he doesn't go in his kitchen because we know he has a butler. He has a full staff.
Right, you're right.
So when he asks for coffee, it's just brought to him.
He hears it.
So it's either that or he's a big Maxwell House instant coffee guy.
Instant guy.
He's probably just tea.
That's why he always needs the spoon.
He might be a tea guy.
Because Bond is...
Bond's coffee only.
He's not tea, especially Fleming's Bond.
It's mud.
Especially Fleming. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump past this oddity, an outlier of a cold open, that's for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the cold open?
Yeah.
It's one of, I think, one of only three that do not have Bond in them as a character.
Right, so you got Dr. No.
Well, there's no cold open. You guys call that.
Yeah,
but it's
fair
not,
enough.
But I'm not counting that one, but okay, you can have that if you like.
Okay.
We're so not taking it.
From Russia with Love. Yeah, we don't need your charity.
Fine.
Film.
Good.
From Russia with Love.
Right. I don't like counting that one because for me I will count it if the actor playing James Bond had to appear on screen.
Well, then the other one doesn't count either.
Yeah.
There's your hint.
Yeah.
Oh
wait, hang on.
Oh, Man with the Golden
there
Gun.
There it is.
Right. Yeah.
Roger Moore plays a mannequin of himself.
Only one without even the actor in it.
Correct.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's big.
Was this a? They're like. I wonder what. Their thought process was, having gone through the Lazenby transition, only to retransition to Connery, to then bring in this guy who now they've signed to more pictures and they understand is a competent actor who knows how the business works and won't fucking grow a beard and move onto a boat.
Yeah. They probably didn't know how much they had.
Although, yeah. There's an anecdote about how Roger Moore kept coming back with his haircut and Cubby kept sending him back shorter, because he had some seriously long hair when he got hired.
Yes, I've seen those photos of him, and we agreed in the last episode where we talked about Roger Moore that he was the most like James Bond of all the actors.
He embraced it the most.
Yeah, the way he lived on the south of France to avoid taxes, etc. I wonder what was going through sort of like production from a production standpoint from Cubby's standpoint of like let's not show him until afterwards and
right
let's not acknowledge it in the way that we did with the
was that on purpose
Lazenby.
There's an unveiling with Lazenby that kind of went over like a lead balloon, but
I wish that was Sylvia Trench, by the way, instead of an Italian agent.
Oh, interesting. Little tie-in.
Yeah.
I love his hair in this. It's the highest and tightest you'll get Roger Moore's Bond.
True.
And he looks fantastic in this. He's just uniformly leather bronze throughout this. Like, he doesn't have a single tan line.
Yeah.
Somehow.
and his other various lines haven't shown up yet on his face and whatnot.
He's got just the right amount of age in his face. He's, what, 45 in this?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I'm approaching live and let die age.
Do you think it's a coincidence that the next time we see Bond's apartment, which is Inspector, it is also a scene where Moneypenny brings him something and M, technically speaking, gives him orders?
Yes.
I don't think they were thinking that far ahead.
I can't imagine they were. I like to know. Now, it makes sense that he's... I would like to see a scene of Daniel Craig's Bond apartment having been decorated.
Like, does he finally get it done?
Does he
hire someone, or does he do it?
Does, like, Swan go, like, we really got to put some stuff up on the
walls here? I feel like they get out of London and move to the south of France or, like, a Normandy or something.
That's a great question. Where are they going to be living?
Yeah.
Oh, you're not thinking that Swan's going to be in this next movie.
Well.
It's not going to happen.
I was hoping.
It's over. It's never.
Is it? You think it's over?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You especially think, the idea of Danny Boyle coming in with this out of left field idea.
It's, you don't think they'll try to tack something on like a Honor Majesty's opening like they were going to do originally?
I wouldn't be surprised to find out Danny Boyle didn't watch Spectre.
Yeah. How about that? I would be surprised to find out he did. The personal life of Bond is intriguing to me. Let's talk about his apartment. You only see it in
Well, we talked about his apartment a lot last week with Phil.
That's right. Sure we did. Another callback. Well, let's continue that conversation. You get Dr. No, you get Live and Let Die, and you get Spectre. Are those the only times you see Bond's apartment?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you think, because he has this like really modern kitchen and he has this almost like colonial living room and bedroom. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing all of Bond's apartment? Just it's just living room, bedroom, and kitchen?
Are you or thinking is there might be more? An office somewhere?
An office? No, because his office desk is essentially in the living room. It's where M puts tea down. But do you think there's another bedroom or this is kind of just a bachelor pad at the time? It's London. Things aren't huge there. It's I sort of feel pad. Like that's just it.
Definitely a bachelor pad.
Yeah.
His one in Dr. No looks like a museum or something.
I know.
It's very strange.
And it has an interesting like diagonal layout too that, yeah, I really
Do you think
fascinated.
That he has a parking spot for his car? What kind of personal car do you think Roger Moore's James Bond drives?
Might be the Bentley.
You think so? You think he's still rocking a green 30s Bentley?
Or maybe like an Alfa Romeo or something, a little tiny...
Yeah, I feel like Roger Moore's James Bond is more of like whatever the fanciest Citroen is.
Mm. Right.
It's possible.
Like, but did flats like that even come with a garage back then?
I don't know. Certainly horse stables were nearby.
Sure. In the Fleming books, he talks about it keeping it at a garage somewhere near his house.
Wow,
with
that's
a guy
crazy.
Who just sort of...
Looks after it
every week. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
That'd be nice.
My man, my car man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. So the Moneypenny getting the girl out again is just reinforcing the relationship that Moneypenny's really into being cuckolded. She's a cuck, guys.
She's a glutton.
She's
for
like, I can't wait to watch James Bond. Have sex with another lady.
Yeah,
I'm gonna keep this
she's
up.
Bros before hoes.
She's certainly James Bond's best friend. I don't care what he thinks.
Oh.
No one is going
to... She's a great friend to him.
No one's going to help him more than she will. And that goes even Felix on down the line.
It's like she's his fixer. She's his Michael Cohen personal attorney.
Yeah. When he tried to quit, she rewrote his resignation letter.
That's right.
To a request for vacation.
She would make $130,000... payments to Stormy Daniels for Bond.
Of course he would.
Yeah.
I want to know if...
And by the time this comes out, who knows what will have been revealed.
Yeah, what will we wake up to tomorrow?
By the way, I love the touch of him asking her if she's married. When he looks at his watch, it's 5:48 in the morning and someone's knocking at the door.
Oh, right.
He's like, you're not married, are you? Like, this is something that he's been through before?
That just came up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was a very nice touch. So they get him out of there and they send him to, where does he go first? New York, right?
He goes to New York. So your who's the most British has happened already. And it's to M and it's down to the guy who dies in a very British way at the United Nations.
It's Bernard Lee.
Really? Kind of like the way that guy taps his earpiece. He's really subtle. I like him. But the way he dies and then nobody really reacts. They look at him, but it's kind of like, is he dying?
he's a real joker, that guy. And whenever anyone's giving a boring speech, he pretends to die. Yeah. So they just assume he's at it again.
Oh, that's that dry English wit.
I like how they decided to have the United Nations look like you're traveling through a small world with how culturally each person's country in front of them is like, okay, you're there. You're Holland.
It's the United Nations versions of that weird dinner in Honor Majesty's Secret Service where each girl's eating.
Yes, each girl's eating the
meal.
What do white people like? Corn. Okay.
I'm opening a new restaurant of racist food where you state your race as you come in and that's what you are relegated to, the most stereotypical meal of your country.
I would just
race.
Lie and say I was Canadian every time.
Just a stump.
So you,
what would
stump
they
the just get
maple
moose burgers
and
maple
and poutine?
Syrup. Yeah, poutine, moose, and maple syrup.
I'm into it. I'm way into it.
I'm Irish, so I would just get potatoes and Guinness. What are you, Phil?
I'm Italian.
So just spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
And Chianti.
Spaghetti.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Portuguese, Italian,
Linguisa.
And half Cuban, so you get a delightful meal.
You get
lovely meal.
Plantains mixed with linguiça.
I haven't had linguiça in a long time.
I like linguica.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Remember last week when we had linguica and then recorded the podcast?
Oh, that was good. I missed that. Let's go to lunch at a Portuguese restaurant today.
Nice. Let's find one of those.
A Portuguese.
Okay, so I want to talk about this New York situation. This driving up to Harlem.
So also, when Bond arrives in New York,
yes,
and he's in the car with Charlie, his driver, mm-hmm, and Whisper drives along and shoots him, they know all of this simply because Solitaire said a man comes, he brings violence. And they were able to determine where and what time he was arriving in what city.
Well, there's an interesting point in that Mr. Big's entire network is a sort of a weird fantastical version of the horrible stereotype that all black people know each other.
Yeah, right. It really is.
The shoeshine guy is in touch with the cab driver who knows the pimp that's driving the...
Well, I think they all get a little taste, you know? Mm. And
it's not even that they know each other. It's that they all have each other's numbers and CB handles.
Yeah, constant contact. Yeah.
I love the 70s CB of it all.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a wonderful... This movie, I don't think... If this movie doesn't exist, I don't think Smokey and the Bandit exists.
Right. Well, that's a very... Yeah. I was thinking about, you know, they talk about how it dipped into the blaxploitation era, but there's also a healthy, healthy dose of rednexploitation in this movie.
Yeah.
And when you think about the fact that Burt Reynolds was offered this one, do you think that was baked in sort of anticipation of good old boy Burt? Because that same year he makes White Lightning, which you could blind show someone two clips from both movies and be very similar. There's like these boat races on the swamps.
Oh, yeah.
These good old boy sheriffs chasing guys.
White Lightning is Archer's favorite movie.
It's awesome.
It's really awesome weird to think that Smokey and the Bandit comes out 4 years after this. Is Gator out at this point already?
Gator's a sequel to White Lightning.
So, okay,
so Gator 76, so, White Lightning comes out like, I think, a month after this movie.
Wow. So what is in the zeitgeist that is doing? Is it Cool Hand Luke? What is Deliverance? When is Deliverance? That's
71.
Later. It's before. Okay, yeah, so.
Or 72 maybe.
This is building, and this is kind of like when it... Proto jumps the shark, and then Smokey and the Bandit really brings it home.
Yeah.
God, I love Smokey and the Bandit.
There's barely a genre for it to be riffing on, but there's all this sort of the seeds of red exploitation or hicksploitation, people call it, in there.
I
found interesting.
I think we should do an off week about Smokey and the Bandit.
Are you serious?
Because it is like so...
It's one of my favorite movies.
Sheriff Pepper.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I haven't watched it in like 10 years, and I remember loving it the 19 times I watched it as a child. So.
That is the biggest leap from Bond movie to in between. I mean,
no, it is not.
Well, I just
there's
made the
smuggling.
Connection
for you. There's espionage.
I mean,
there's
J.W. Pepper chases. Is definitely the connection there. I'm trying to think of
super
at least
villains.
One other connection, even an actor, other than Burt Reynolds being considered for Bond. I mean,
you've got to do a run of
and we just do Sam
also
Neill.
Rans or almost Bonds.
Yeah.
You do a Sam Neill episode or Burt Reynolds one.
Wait a minute. I've got to be able to find some connection. Hal Needham directed it. Jerry Reed, Sally Field, Jackie Gleason. God, I mean, is there anything in there?
Chart topping theme song.
Oh, man. I love that song. Jerry Reed's one of my favorite musicians. And Jerry Reed is so good in that movie. Like, he is talk about, you got Brosnan Hurt acting. Watch Jerry Reed get beat up in that movie in the biker bar. His Hurt acting is bar none, top notch, the best Hurt acting I've ever seen.
Nice.
That's how you do Hurt acting.
Biker bar none?
Biker bar none. All right, I'm sorry. I'm done with my Smokey the Bandit rant. That was going to be the first movie we did as an outdoor movie here at the household.
Oh, so well, that's got to be kicking back up pretty soon, right?
Yeah.
I'm excited to talk about this pimpmobile because when Felix says we need a... What does he say? Says we need a make on
a white... Give me a make
on
a white pimpmobile.
Yeah.
How vague could you be?
He does follow it up with the license plate, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I also realize that I'm going to start using... If I ever have an alias, it's going to be Nelson David George, what he uses for the license plate.
I love the tiny missile.
This,
you know?
This might be a gloff to some.
Oh,
let's hear it.
I think collectors know the deal. Do you notice that her tarot cards have 007 on the back
yes.
of them?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not that much of a gloff.
No, but that's a strange thing. You either notice that or you don't, because once you know it, you can't unsee it. But
it's like a magic card drawing.
But Jimmy Blades bought me the deck of those. It's somewhere in the garage when we moved. Nice. I've had trouble finding it, but
the lovers. It is crazy that this movie is introducing Jane Seymour.
I know.
She's 21.
She is
here.
Just holds the screen.
Are you a fan?
I love it.
Oh yeah, she's one of my favorites.
But she's also like, she's not only is she beautiful, but she's also like acting. Like she's like, because I find a lot of times you have a lot of these Bond girls that they're not, how do I put this? Great at acting.
Not nuanced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I would even put, like Rosie Carter is playing it too big, I think.
She's pretty bad.
She's trying so big.
Yeah, she's.
She's in a different, she's like, she is, I think she's playing in a theater where they've only sold tickets to people in the third row of the balcony. So. That's how she's performing.
That's the most consideration anyone has ever given that performance ever. And you're right. I stand with you.
But she's
big and shrill.
It is cool. It is very cool to see all the Harlem stuff. Like to see New York at that time.
I love Strutter too. I would love to see a film with Strutter. For some reason, it never occurred to me that Strutter is the one that gets killed later. For some reason.
Oh, why?
I don't know. I just had forgotten about him as a character.
He disappears for so long.
Yeah.
And there's so much movie. This is a really packed movie.
And it's a different city.
It's New Orleans, right?
Yeah, he's back in New Orleans, so I just assume it's... I don't know.
I like that everyone that is in the funeral procession is always in on whoever they're murdering.
Yeah.
And they all have one outfit for this move.
Yeah.
Whatever the day.
It's called Shot on the Same Day.
Oh, absolutely. Outfit. Like, they didn't move the camera for some of them. Now, all right, bring Strutter in. Put him here. The white agent who gets killed in the pre-title sequence, I just found out, is the son of Roger Moore's cinematic idol. And that's how he got that job.
Who's the cinematic idol?
Oh, God. I knew you were going to ask me that.
Oh.
His last name is Dix, and it's not the cowboy, but it's some actor that Roger Moore went to see in his youth, and then he found out his son was local to New Orleans and got him the gig.
Oh, wow.
That's why that British agent has no British accent.
Yeah, that's another thing that I was like, should I go back? Because they just called him a British agent. I don't remember. Our man in New Orleans or
could
whatever.
Could be an expat. Yeah.
I suppose.
You know, over there working for the secret agent.
Secret agent. What in the world?
Can we talk real quick while we're still in New York?
He's in the play with Rosie Carter.
Yeah, he is.
They're doing dinner theater down there. Bond's Chesterfield coat in New York.
Oh.
It might be the best Moore has ever looked.
The double breast. Situation. It is gorgeous.
I agree with you. I think because his hair is high and tight, he's got gloves, and that overcoat, is he wearing a blazer under that, or is it just
a whole suit under
it? He is, but it's still so finely tailored.
It's a Chesterfield coat that's just chef kiss.
Yeah, I've often said that's my favorite.
He explodes into Safari Jacket Land in the next movie and sort of rides that bus all the way to 1985.
Yeah, that's right.
But right here, it's just a real classic look on him.
Yeah.
He's looking good in this movie.
This whole movie, I love the way he's dressed.
It's a lot of good outfits.
Even when he goes hang gliding, and he's wearing a navy suit. But that navy suit peels away to a khaki suit.
Yeah. Why?
I know why.
I know why it's dark for the first part. Why not keep it
why
dark?
Why not stay dark? But I guess you just island wear.
Right,
like, it simply isn't done. You don't wear a dark suit in the tropics, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like white after Labor Day.
That's a good point. I have to say, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but Quarrel Jr.'s placement of the secret latch to open up his radios and guns.
Yeah.
Awful.
No. Don't you think it should go up?
It's a bad choice.
It should go up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should go not in the direction that anything you put on. Yeah.
You're absolutely
the
thing
when you
is
use
for.
The thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I have a secret door, but to activate it, you have to turn the handle.
I don't.
Or this
don't,
light switch. This switch, yeah, Mark's secret door.
I don't want to be insensitive, but Quarrel's dad thought a tank was a dragon. So maybe smart.
Listen, there were dragon legends about that island.
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe they're just dumb. It's possible.
They're just boat people.
I'm going to bring this movie up because there's also something I noticed in here. I don't know if we talked about this before, but you guys keep talking. I'm going to find this. There's something special in here.
So if I was only listening to the commentary 10 years ago, I would have learned that Rick Baker did the Baron Samedi head and
that's
the Kananga
balloon
thing. Huh?
Is that in the commentary?
It is. In the scene where Samidi's head gets shot and his eyes roll up, which always blew my mind, but it's a Rick Baker effect. So there's differing opinions on whether or not different stories on whether or not Rick Baker did the Mr. Big makeup, because not a particularly good makeup.
No, it sure isn't.
But Yaphet Kotto, who says a lot of crazy shit, said it was Rick Baker who did that makeup.
Huh.
Famous alien abductee Yaphet Kotto.
Right. Exactly. I mean, he seems like a lovely man, but he tells another crazy story about how he got fixated on living like James Bond after he made this movie.
No kidding.
He said he had to have the best, he had to have the limousine, he had to have the best suits, and it was all because of Bond. And he said he had a 3-year bender where he couldn't snap out of it.
Wow.
I love it.
His character completely changes in the cave. He's really stern and serious throughout, and then when Bond shows up, he's more than just hospitable in an evil villain sort of way. He's just suddenly like super happy.
You're familiar with my part of the movie I love, which is the you didn't hear this yet?
Because I don't think
Thunderball comes out. Everyone's confused as to how many we're recording at once, but I discussed in the Thunderball episode, everybody's heard already, just how friendly Largo is there's like this brief moment where in every Bond movie where the guard is dropped by the supervillain who's talking to Bond, and they just for a second you get a glimmer of humanity out of these supervillains, and like in Largo's case it's when Bond is asking him how fast the Disco Volante goes, almost 15 knots, more than that, 20.
Yeah,
like he's just so delighted to talk boats Gregarious, with someone. Yeah. Like,
finally, a guy gets my boat thing. Here's a theory.
Yeah. Yes.
These films, while we love them and they're classics in their way, they're not really made by actors, directors.
No.
An actor will make a choice. And in fact, Yaphet Kotto, I was listening to an interview with him where he was really pleased with his choice to be this gracious host because he thought it made it more scary if he was super cheerful and positive and friendly to them. And it is a good choice.
Yeah,
he doesn't get there in any organic way.
No.
Because he's just sort of making shit up on the day.
Well, I also felt like it worked for the character, though, because like he's pretending to be this Mr. Big guy, and then he's Kananga.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little fractured personality happening anyway.
Yeah, sure.
There's an air of madness because Bond has at that point ruined everything for him for the most part. He says he doesn't, but it does feel like maybe he's like, all right, I've lost everything, so I'm going to have some fun with this guy going out or something. Yeah.
He also cites himself as he said Kananga was a Bond super fan, so he was. He was like emulating him and jealous of him, and he wanted to like impress him.
That's interesting.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Another thing we can relate to.
And then Yaphet Kotto ended up becoming Kananga.
It's weird, right?
Yeah.
I have so many questions for Yaphet Kotto.
I think he's like maybe the most gettable guest you could possibly have on this podcast.
Really? Next to Lazenby?
Where does he live?
He's got to live in LA. He once did a master class at my grad school. I didn't get to go to it.
That's your home stretch, guys. Like guests from the movies.
We should.
I know.
They're all dying.
Damn.
Not you, Yaphet. You're long for this world. The aliens have helped you quite a bit.
She does a lot of appearances.
Oh, not after what I've said.
Well, let's talk about her.
Because like having Pierce
I
want to
show you this. Did we talk about this last time?
Brosnan's a get. You can get Brosnan in here. Brosnan would love to be a guest in Matt Gourley's home, I'm sure.
I would have to get Phil
I'd love to have him, but I would feel bad. So,
What would be the move? Would we not mention your opinions of him at all? Or like, how would we... Let's say that he was here. Let's say he had agreed to do it. And we got ourselves a James Bond.
I got this.
The pinnacle of Pierce Brosnan.
So Matt's first question to Pierce Brosnan is, so Pierce, you're on record as being somewhat unhappy with your run as Bond. Talk to me about what didn't happen for you. Why did you leave disappointed?
Oh, that's a good
end. And then let him be the bad guy for his own run.
That's a good
end. And then you just agree with him.
The whole time I would be paranoid that he knew that I had talked ill of his performance.
He's listening to this right now.
I know.
But the problem is, I bet it goes in one ear and out the other. God bless you, Pierce. But I bet he doesn't retain any of this stuff.
I think when you are that handsome, you don't hear.
You're just floating. Your feet are...
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, if he was coming on here, I bet a bunch of people would tag him and me in the same tweet and go like I can't
wait.
Because people have done that before. Like,
oh, yeah.
Matt, why don't you like Brosnan's acting? And it's like, I know he'll probably never see it or whatever. But I do hate when people... tag you in things
tag
that
you in negative
would hurt
things.
Somebody else in any way.
People are dicks.
Yeah. There's no need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ugh. Because I've also gone on record and say I like him as an actor otherwise, and he seems like a wonderful man.
Yeah.
And I say that again.
So you could hack all his social media and, you know, just sort of control the feed of what he's seeing maybe in the weeks following the podcast. That's
There's really
option.
No way to do it. It's disappointing to me. He'd be so, I think it'd be so interesting to have him.
Well, it's not going to happen anyway. That guy's
I don't,
he's busy, he's
I
working,
don't,
he lives in Kauai.
You know what? He lives in Kauai, he lives in Malibu, too.
Yeah,
the guy loves, you know what we do? We talk about how much we both enjoy, what does he do? He does the long boards with the sticks.
Oh, paddleboard?
Yeah. We'll just talk about sure. how much we all love paddleboarding.
Better learn paddleboarding.
I love those boards with sticks.
Yeah.
All right, Rosie, you were talking about Rosie.
Well,
sorry.
Rosie Carter.
I can't remember if this came up before, but when Bond says, make your choice to Rosie, it's echoed in the music. Do-do-do. And he goes, make your choice. It's at the same time. Hold
what?
On.
What?
Watch.
Is this a gloft or is this like schizophrenia kicking in?
It's a little of both. Oh, wait. Okay.
And I'll kill you if you don't.
But you couldn't. You wouldn't. Not after what we just done.
I certainly wouldn't have killed you before. It used to be a convincing act, Rosie. It's thin.
It's not an act.
Make your choice.
You know what? I'm convinced.
That should be a drop for someone's awesome remix.
Make your choice.
Make your choice. Make it.
Make your choice. Make your choice.
Right now.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
This is the good content that listeners
turn your monitor off, man.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
That's amazing.
Why?
Make your choice. I'm a spy. James Bond.
Why does Coconut Head not shoot Bond as well when he walks up to Rosie's body?
I feel like Coconut Head has like one or two bullets.
Maybe.
I feel like Coconut Head is like...
Two lenses. Two scopes for eyes, but one bullet.
Stereoscopic security.
They're like, well, we could give you the 3D, Mr. Kananga, but if we do that, we're only going to be able to put two bullets in there at most. But if we don't do 3D, we could have like 100 bullets in there. He's like, give me the 3D.
Yeah, right. That's so Kananga.
What do you think James Bond would do? He'd want the best of anything. Yeah. Well, give me the 3D.
Well, James Bond only needs one bullet.
Make your choice. Make your choice.
Oh,
make
man. Now that's in my head for the rest of the day.
Great. We didn't even talk about the cold open. I mean, not the cold open, the opening titles.
Title sequence?
There's one girl in particular. This is almost a gloft, but not a gloft.
They are phoning it in a little bit, those dancers.
Yeah, my favorite dancer is the one that is dancing when Maurice Binder's name comes up. And she is seemingly twirling in a circle. I will describe it as twirling in a circle, lazily waving at the ceiling.
Yes. Yes.
That was a popular dance at the time.
Like, she's really like, hi. So look out for that. When Maurice Binder's name comes up in the title sequence,
It's in my notes. Maurice Binder did not have a lot of choreography advice for his models.
No, it's very bizarre. But like, there's a literal... There's like a,
oh,
like a little
him?
Wrist twirl that makes it a wave that is very funny to me.
Good stuff.
Okay, so I like the club. Why is he ordering bourbon? Have we discussed this? Does anyone know why he keeps ordering bourbon?
Well, he is on record as wanting to break from the martini.
Yeah,
thing.
So that's why he doesn't smoke cigarettes, doesn't do martinis.
He smokes cigars and drinks bourbon. And
right.
Yeah, but
he
like,
partakes in the local stuff.
Why?
Generally.
I guess just to differentiate him from...
I know, but you're James Bond, not Sean Connery.
Yeah,
but those were also movie tropes. Not cigarettes, but the martini thing was obviously the Vesper thing, but he never really went on to drink that much in the books. He would always kind of have a different drink in the books.
Yeah. Oh, he'd have like a drink of the book?
Basically.
He would drink anything. In
yeah.
The books. But Moore's constant thing, especially on this first one, was how do I make it my own? How do I not... make it seem like I'm afraid of taking the role. And he was very cognizant of not wanting to do an impersonation. So I think where he saw opportunities to zag where Connery zigged, he took them.
Yeah.
And which I think is
good.
It worked out for him. I mean, I think I said last time, Lazenby kicked that door open, but and let, you know, kind of cleared the stage and let Moore do a new thing.
Right.
But more really capitalized on it.
It is interesting then when you see flashes of Connery in Moore's Bond, like in For Your Eyes Only when he kicks the car over. I do like it, though. I like seeing a stern Roger Moore, but maybe it's best in little doses because it really frames it as something special.
That's a very good point.
He's serious. When Moore gets serious, you know he's serious.
And you know he was cranky about that, too.
Yeah.
He's like, my Bond wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And there's a weird note about when Moore took the role. The producers were teaching him the James Bond walk. This is sort of in league with that, what is and isn't Bond and stuff, but... You have to move like a cat, pushing off at the ball of the foot. Once you move, it's got to look like you could walk through a brick wall if necessary.
Wow.
Doesn't that sound interesting?
Pushing off at the ball of the foot, I think of that as kind of like a tippy-toe walker.
When I read that, especially when the brick wall thing, I was thinking the way Craig skulks around Casino Royale.
Yeah.
When he's like walking to the casino and stuff. He's walking with that purpose.
This is reminding me of a YouTube video that I found. It was on... I believe Deadspin was where I had originally seen it, and it maybe was a year ago. It might have been before that, before the world became nothing but horrible things. it was a guy who works as a reenactor in some sort of a colonial or pre-colonial reenactment place, some historical place. I don't remember where it is exactly.
Williamsburg.
And I'm trying to remember what he was wearing. I feel like it was like a similar to a Davy Crockett looking fellow. but he does this 50. There's a 15 minute video of him explaining how people used to walk.
Wow.
What?
Yeah, shoes have made people not walk like human beings.
Oh, I've seen this.
Okay,
yeah, all I know
right.
Exactly what you're talking about. That's
so
right.
And it's very, it is. He does talk about like the ball of your foot and how like you should be like feeling for anything that might be on the ground as he does weirdly fascinating 15 minutes of video.
Yeah, that's right.
So kids, if you're
check
bored.
To be fair, though, this is talking about pushing off at the ball of the foot, which gives you this propulsion kind of thing, and it's this sort of predatory swagger.
Yeah, it's the opposite kind of.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
And like, I mean, I
that's
could
a
never...
defensive walk.
You know what, this Matt, could you cut that out where I talked about the video that was
it.
The opposite?
You got it.
No.
Definitely
Matt
just cut that out.
Yeah.
I definitely cut
that out. I can't in a million years picture Roger Moore going through a brick wall, though.
No.
Sorry, Roger.
No.
I could picture him being draped in velvet.
Yeah.
Yes.
Roger Moore...
He basically is. His
he
skin
seems
is
like... He seems like, of all the James Bond actors that have come and gone, he seems like he was the one who most enjoyed the fashionability and trend of shag carpeting.
So much so... that I have a gloft, okay?
Oh.
The boat that Bond steals last and pulls up to the dock in with all the like cops and everything has shag carpeting in it. When he gets out, you can see it. It's like
what
brown
a terrible
or green
idea.
Shag carpeting.
What
I know.
Must it smell like?
I know.
So wet.
I know. It's incredible.
This is ridiculous.
When he's getting up onto the dock, you can see down in the boat and it has shag carpeting.
I like how they, when Sheriff Pepper is talking about his brother-in-law and the cops see the black gentleman driving the boat, they just go wide-eyed. They don't say anything. They just go, oh, that must be his brother-in-law.
Yeah.
But they're so like,
I never noticed that. Like,
like oh my God.
Did his sister marry?
His sister married a black.
Oh my God.
Like, that's a real like choice the actors are making and are directed to do.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
That's a loft.
The way he kept saying it, my brother-in-law.
Billy Bob,
are you
what
sure?
Are you some kind of...
Does that boat get destroyed?
Yeah, it's
poor
the one
Billy
that
Bob.
Rides up into that tanker, right?
Poor Billy Bob, man.
Oh, well, he had it coming.
When he wakes
a real
up,
racist
when
prick.
He wakes up, it's not going to be good.
Good for him.
Okay, so the Harlem stuff, the bourbon.
We're down into Jamaica already.
We're already in Jamaica. This is crazy.
You know what? It's easy to look at like a film like Thunderball and they use the jetpack and you go like, oh, that was novel and crazy at the time.
Thunderball.
This one, it never occurred to me because hang gliders have been such a thing for so long that when this would have come out, this is right before the hang gliding craze of the 70s and 80s, that would have been this like, whoa, what is this thing, a hang glider?
I had no idea there was a time before hang gliding.
Yeah.
I guess it's very similar to, you know, the water ski, you know, the jet ski. That
yeah, what do they call it? Water bike.
Yeah, the water bike. Water bike. Yeah.
Or even helicopters. They were kind of novel.
Yeah,
you see
from
them
Russia with love.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's always set 5 minutes from now. That's the world of Bond, right?
That's right.
That's why you'll never get the period film.
I wish no.
I wish they Not would. Maybe that's what Dan... No.
We were kids, so I caught this probably on the ABC movie back in the day. Mm-hmm. I don't know how quickly, but it was fairly immediately after watching Live and Let Die that we tried the hairspray and a lighter trick.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys do that as kids?
Yeah. I lit so many aerosol things on fire as a child.
Yeah.
I was a maniac. I would describe myself as a near arsonist.
I was too. I lit my bedroom on fire, as a matter of fact.
Did you really?
Yeah. In fact, I was deodorant, but not spray deodorant. It was because I was doing a lot of that spray deodorant fire thing, and so I had a stick of deodorant which has alcohol.
So you're wondering.
And so you could light it like a torch and hold it. And so I did that in my room, and I shook it to put it out, and then the deodorant flew out of the canister, rolled under my bed, which was an antique bed. Full of like an old box spring that was just, and it just went. And so I ran. My buddy was there. We got water. We got it out, but my carpet was all charred. And then I was waiting for my stepdad to come home that day, and I had to pay for a new mattress out of my allowance. And yeah, it was really stupid. But I was always blown. Well, you know me and Squibs. Like I was always building bombs and blowing shit up. But do you remember when you would do that aerosol spray thing? There was always, and I don't know if this is true or not, but everybody would always say you can't do it for long because the flame will creep up and it'll blow up.
Yeah, well,
that's not true, right?
No.
So go ahead, kids. No, don't do it.
Also, kids, be aware that if you're going to shoot at a gas tank, it's not going to blow anything up unless you're using an incendiary round.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
So I just want to share a little bit of.
Is that true?
Yeah, it is true. The aerosol can. I used to take. You know, another thing I used to do is WD-40. I was a big fan of. I was a big fan of taking WD-40 and writing my name on concrete and then lighting that on fire.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That was good. You know what? That was good American fun.
That was good. That was what we were up to when we were kids. We were outside burning things.
Yeah.
What were you doing, kids?
There was
just
no
watching
internet.
YouTube.
Yeah. What else could you do?
Yeah.
What do you think we would be like if the internet existed? Like if the internet
I'm
was
afraid because I had already figured out Squibs, and you should check this out. There's a documentary that Jay Cheel from the Film Junk podcast made about me getting squibbed called The Squibbening, and it goes back to my drawings I had done as a kid on how to do these diagrams and everything like
that.
Are
the drawings in the doc?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then it ends with me getting squibbed.
I've seen the video.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a whole little mini doc
about your
it.
Dreams.
I know.
But I wonder if the internet, if the internet existed at what it is now back in say like 85, like I wonder if I would have just would I be a writer?
I would certainly be flagged on no fly lists for all the shit
the shit you were Googling. Yeah. I wonder if I would have more of a knowledge of like. Or would I just use it to watch dumb videos?
Yeah, I think I would have been like making so many films, especially with the filmmaking technology that I, you know, like I had to use Super 8 cameras and stuff.
I remember being blown away by Microsoft Encarta, the encyclopedia CD-ROM from Windows 95 that I just was like, there's a part of me that thinks that had I had all of Earth's knowledge at my fingertips, I'd be the smartest person in the world.
Yeah.
But there's the other part of me that knows that I... Would not.
Would waste
You'd be
it.
Down some horrible rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have invented cake farts. Like, that's what would have happened.
Yeah. I mean, I'm grateful to the internet in the 80s, I guess. It made me seek things and work for my knowledge, which was helpful, ultimately.
What? Squarespace is still bringing you this podcast. We're discussing Live and Let Die, and we're discussing all of the magical things that are happening in New Orleans, like caskets being dropped onto people who are just killed, and then they're picked up and then moved along in a wonderful funeral. Well, I bet you probably wanted to have a website that's dedicated to just that thing. You can, thanks to Squarespace. Think it, dream it, make it with Squarespace. They're beautiful templates. They're created by world-class designers. Squarespace, they make it easy to turn your idea into a unique website. You can customize everything from the look and the feel and the settings, and the products are all optimized for mobile right out of the box with a built-in search engine optimization that you don't have to worry about. Showcase your work, blog, publish the content, announce a special project. You can even sell products and services of all kinds in just a few clicks. Then you can use Squarespace Analytics to help you grow in real time. Nothing to install or patch or upgrade ever. Though, if you do have a question, Squarespace has award-winning 24/7 customer support. It's there to help. It's like your own personal Q branch. Weird that we're saying this in an episode that Q doesn't appear in. No Desmond Llewellyn in Live and Let Die. Maybe you want to do a website about what it would be like if Desmond Llewellyn was in Live and Let Die. Well, Squarespace would be the place to do that. You can keep dreaming, but you can also make it a reality with a website from Squarespace. All you have to do is go to squarespace.com/bond for a free trial. And then when you're ready to launch your website all about Q being in Live and Let Die, you can use the offer code BOND and save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/bond. Use that offer code BOND.
James Bonding Podcast.
Guys, let's talk. Let's talk real talk. This episode's brought to you by Zeepa. Why Zeepa? It's Happy Z spelled backwards. Zeepa is an American-made boil and bite mouth guard that is a game changer in the bedroom. Did you know that? I am a snorer. Well, buckle up because I am also a Zeepa owner, which means I'm no longer a snorer, and it's easy to use. It's like having a custom-made mouth guard that you sleep with. Let me tell you, it takes one or two nights to get used to, but once you get used to it, you're never picking a night of sleep without this thing again. As long as you can help it, you will always have Zeepa with you. With other snoring devices, you only have one feature, and they either have a lower jaw or stabilize the tongue, but Zeepa does both. There's no other snoring solution like this in the world, not to mention this costs less than $100, and since Zeepa custom molds to your mouth, it's super comfortable. Plus, it's cleared by the FDA. It's safe and effective. But if you aren't happy with the product, you can return it within 90 days for a full refund. It's no surprise that Zeepa has 5-star customer service and strives to maintain the highest reviews and ratings. I bet Kananga snores. He should be using Zeepa. I have Zeepa at home. I boiled it. I warmed it up. I bit into it. It's molded to my teeth. It's very comfortable to wear. And now I can't sleep without it. So go try Zeepa. And start enjoying Happy Z's every night. For your sake and the sake of the people sleeping near you, just go to Zeepa, that's ZYPPAH.com, and learn more using the promo code BONDING for free shipping. That's Zeepa.com, code BONDING for free shipping. Tell him Matt sent you. Tell him other Matt sent you, too. Do it.
It's Bonding Podcast!
You know, it's like... Yeah, I don't know that I ever would have picked up a Fangoria magazine.
Hey, Fangoria right. Magazine.
Yeah, let's talk about that now. I know we talked about it a little bit last week, but it's worth mentioning. You are now the editor-in-chief of the new premium Fangoria magazine.
That's right. Fangoria magazine, which was in publication since 1979, wow. And it went away a couple of years ago, and it's been purchased by a guy named Dallas Sonier, who's my new boss. He's the producer of films such as Bone Tomahawk and Brawl in Cell Block 99.
Oh,
so he's got a real affinity for practical effects, and he's a real fan, and he's got a crazy dream that we're going to bring this magazine back and bring it back as a brand and make horror movies under the
brand.
And
we're talking quarterly now? This
quarterly.
Is going to be a quarterly?
You're making horror movies under the brand?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about all of it. And
what kind of like level films are you making? Like
they're going to be, you know, I can't speak to specifics about like how much, but the philosophy of it is that they got to feel appropriate to Fangoria. So they're not going to be CGI'd affairs. Yeah, they're going to be real, like,
oh, this is so
embracing the practical end of stuff.
And, oh my God.
And they're going to be fun. And the magazine is a kind of a dream for me because I was reading it. I have issues of, you know, that I had when I was 15, 16.
I've been in that magazine.
I was
interviewed for it a few years ago. I think if I can remember correctly, it was because of I was there too, talking to people, talking to like people from Halloween such. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I think,
I got to find it.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in the back room.
Yeah.
But it's such a huge part of my childhood and a huge part of why I got into writing, why I got into films as a passion. Because horror movies scared the shit out of me as a kid. And so the fix was to read about how they got made. And suddenly I wasn't afraid anymore.
Same. Ah, that's funny.
And then what got absorbed through that, because there was some quite good writing back there, like aimed at 15-year-olds, but you know, it didn't talk down to you, which I thought was kind of cool. And you start to read about directors and editors and how, all right, so this movie's gory, but this movie's actually very good. And you would learn about, you know, how the auteur theory. I've learned auteur theory in fucking Fangoria. So, you know.
God, I go to the comic book store, and I love comics, but there was always Fangoria and Starlog.
Starlog, same company.
Yeah.
Technically, we own Starlog. So, you know, hit me up if you got some ideas about how to resurrect Starlog.
Are you talking to me or the listeners?
I'm talking to you and the listeners.
Oh, my God.
It's, yeah, our first issue is coming out in October.
I like this idea of a quarterly, right?
One of my
favorite magazines is a quarterly magazine, and it comes and it's a quality stock and it's bound beautifully, and when it comes, it's like, it's that four times a year where I get this magazine.
Well, Birth Movies Death too did that.
But more like six times a year, I think. Uh-huh. And I loved my time at Birth Movies Death, but this magazine, in terms of presentation and production, Matt Myra is totally on point.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Like, they sent me the dummy, which is like a big thick blank of like how many pages it's going to be with the stock. And so it's just white.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the Fretboard Journal magazine?
No, sir.
It's a quarterly that actually sort of based itself off of this very popular surf magazine. That
and
is
also,
I'll
thank you not to call Matt Myra sir.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. We're very informal here.
Oh, fair enough,
sir. I'm no one, sir. But there's something about that. That's how you, I think, resurrect the written periodical.
Yeah.
As you give it some heft and you make it a thing that you look forward to. And not like one of these, like, you know, when I get an issue of like not to badmouth Car and Driver, but like when I get an issue of Car and Driver, I'm
sure.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, we want it to feel, I mean, the thing that got me hired, I think, is that I told Dallas when I was a kid, Fangoria was like a special coveted thing that I had to go seek out, right? Because it wasn't at the convenience store next to my house. It was the convenience store 2 miles away that was okay with carrying it. So you had to put a little effort into getting it, and it was a special thing when you got it. I didn't get it every month because I couldn't get over there or whatever, but I wanted to resurrect that feeling in a 2018 reader. So it's not going to have an online component, really. Yeah. The stuff in the magazine, and I can't talk about what's coming in the magazine exactly, but there's some really exclusive stuff that I'm excited to bring to people, and you're only going to see it in the magazine.
And it comes out in October?
Comes out in October.
I'm in.
And I want to know why Fangoria has not yet appeared in the Goldbergs.
That's a great question.
It is a great question, isn't it?
That is a great
question. Make that happen,
Matt. Let me just say that, listen, I know that, you know, you're not calling all the shots over there, but this is a personal issue from my collection when I was a little kid.
Oh, my God.
And I'm going to give it to you. And if it turns up in Fangoria, or if it turns up in the Goldbergs, you know, hey, that'd be swell.
Let me see.
But I want you to just take it with you, put it in the writer's room, maybe just plan an idea. If you need a different issue,
I'm trying
if you need
to think
like
of
issue
what
17,
we would do.
Call me up, I'll get it to you.
Oh, man. Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
Mm-hmm. Because I know that the Goldbergs is very purposefully set in 1980-something.
Yep.
So you'll hop around, the dates aren't really super important.
God, this almost would have been perfect.
That's not what I
for the episode we just did, but
the Fangoria episode.
No, we did an episode where Adam borrows his mother's fur coat because he wants to recreate a Bigfoot video. At first, it was going to be a Harry and the Henderson sequel he wanted to make, but blah blah blah. We ended up making it because he wanted to get the video on Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Nice.
But you know what? I'll see what I can do.
If you could ever do a Bond throwback for Fangoria, this is the film, right? I mean, this is the closest to a horror movie any Bond movie gets, kind of with the voodoo.
It's
supernatural.
It's got a sort of Hammer / Amicus vibe to it.
Well, it also has snakes. It also has
alligators,
animatronic creatures, men turning into balloons. There's so many things.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There's so many things.
But yeah, I mean, the fact that Baron Samedi lives at the end is very supernatural and
right.
Yeah,
how many times can that guy die?
I don't think he really died when he went in with the snakes, guys. I think he put on a show. I think he just pretended to die. He's like, I'm not getting out of this. I'm gonna pretend to die. None of these snakes are poisonous.
Fair enough.
That's our secret here at this theme park.
Thanks, Chris Nolan.
That's our secret at this theme park. Like, what is that show that they do, right?
I love it.
It's a tourist show.
It reminds me that at the Disneyland Hotel, they used to do some kind of like tiki fire show. It was like a fire dance show or something.
Yeah, and the Polynesian has the luau show.
Yeah,
and, right? And the language is pulled from that a little bit. So there's an episode of Mad Men where he goes to Hawaii, and the guy is like, "The show for you wonderful people."
Yeah.
Like, this, like he took it word for word, and it's in Mad Men.
Really?
Yeah. Like that. Yeah. It's really strange.
I love the way that guy talks.
Yeah. He's a real...
Baron Savity, folks.
I wish the movie took place over a longer period of time, so it would have been conceivable that Pepper would have been there on vacation with his wife.
you had on a recent episode, you were trying to figure out how much time it spans in a given Bond movie.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
What do you think's happening here?
Oh, this is a great question.
Yeah.
I think we're looking at... Are we counting the deaths of the agents at the beginning of the movie as the beginning of the period of time, or do we just start from Bond's engagement? We'll start from the... Okay, so we'll give that 2 days. I think this happens in under a week. I think this is a six-day time span.
Mm. It just feels so... It feels so long because there's so many different set pieces.
There's so many different outfits.
Yeah, I'd say 2 weeks.
You feel two?
Yeah.
You think he's gone for half a month on this case?
A lot of traveling. A lot of back and forth from Jamaica to
New York. Yeah, but those are short trips.
But do you feel like Morris Bond is the kind of traveler who needs a day after he lands?
I do.
I do feel that. I feel like he's delicate.
You know what? I feel like he's got a lot. I think he has his own personal doctor who prescribes him things that he does not, that we don't at that point understand as being narcotics. Right. But in the early 70s, it was like, yeah, take this.
Feel good.
Take this upper. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Crippling pill addiction.
Yeah.
Film's interesting, too. I noticed there's a holy shit. This is the first time I think that there's a curse word in a Bond movie.
Correct.
And three silent fucks.
Three?
Well, Mrs. Bell has one. And then J.W. Pepper basically,
boat engine cuts him out.
Yeah. And then there's another motherfucker that one of the black guys says that I can't remember. Like, there's just, they're really embracing this kind of, I mean, that's another thing for Moore's era, you know, just a little vulgarity.
Just going
it's got to be Tom Mankiewicz, the new screenwriter. Well, he did Diamonds Are Forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have thought Diamonds would have got a little saltier.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. In Vegas,
guys,
especially.
It's perfect. We don't need to change anything about that movie. I did not, by the way, I went to Vegas. I did not learn how to play Baccarat. Because I could not find a Baccarat table.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine they'd be around much.
There is one at the Aria, I'm told. So next time I go.
You gotta.
I'm going to make a beeline for that.
Why do I have this note? Quote, what happened to your friend? Listen. Quote, someone's saying that in the film and then it cuts away. But I want to know what the rest of that combination or conversation is. What happened to your friend? Listen. And then it cuts away. Is it two of the cops? I can't remember.
I'm not sure I remember that one.
Oh, is it the cops right before Pepper commandeers the vehicle? No.
I can't remember.
What's happening there. All right. Sorry, popping back into my notes here.
Mm-hmm. When they knock out Bond in the little like lounge room where they're going to cut off his pinky.
Yeah.
And Whisper has to carry Bond out of the room.
Yeah.
How many takes do you think they were able to do that? Because it looks like Whisper's really strong.
That's why I think that was it.
Yeah, again, I think that's the best.
Got the one.
By the way, I will say this, and this happened to me last time. Every time I watch this movie, I forget about the plane portion of the chase sequence.
Yeah.
Every single time I'm going to watch this movie, I forget that this scene exists.
I do too.
And why is that, do you think?
I don't know.
I think it's because it's sort of unremarkable and completely superfluous.
Yeah, and right before the boat chase.
Yeah, so and I guess it's like, it's also like, why, like, it has everything going for it. It's got funny civilian who is somehow now involved in a James Bond chase.
Yeah, Mrs. Bell.
It's got Bond taking the helm of something. It's got Bond in a vehicle. It's got, you know, it's got Bond breaking wings off of a plane. This has usually everything I like in a chase, but I just always forget this exists.
There was something that I read where Mankiewicz was under the orders from, I think, Saltzman. Let's have a plane chase where the plane never takes off. And that was it.
That sounds about
right. That's how they rolled.
Were they also like, let's have a boat chase, but a lot of it's on land.
Yeah. And then let's do it again in the next movie.
Yeah.
I only just found out that Saltzman and Broccoli at this point were trading off.
Right.
So this was a Saltzman jam. Wow. And the next one was the Cubby in the lead seat.
I guess that sort of makes sense, though, because they're cranking him out every year at that point. So
this is his last jam, then.
Yeah.
Because he's off by Spy Who Loved Me, right? Isn't that Broccoli's first solo flight?
Exactly. The last one.
So this is really his last one.
Yeah. I think maybe Harry got a little bit of a raw deal. I think he was unlikable.
I have to agree with that.
I don't know. I get the feeling he was difficult and nuts and not grounded in reality, and Cubby's like, stop ordering all these elephant shoes.
My heart breaks when they show that footage in Everything or Nothing where they're at the premiere or something, and they run into each other.
Yeah.
And there's like this sort of like, oh my God, hey, but it's like also like, oh man, you fucked up, bro.
Well, it's interesting if they are trading off, it's worth looking at who's, I don't think they did that regularly enough, because in the early days they were probably together on him.
You know, together. If you back it up two films, though, that means that Saltzman did On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
That can't be right.
And Cubby did Diamonds.
And I do like Live and Let Die way better than Man with the Golden Gun, so that's interesting.
Very interesting.
It's Cubby that Connery had the problem with, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Mm.
But then everybody else...
What is that? Is he on the Tonight Show when he says that?
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody else loves Cubby. And Sean Connery, to be honest, doesn't seem like
the easiest person to get along with.
Friendliest and easiest person to get along with. I don't know.
If you're into tennis, he loves you.
Golf or tennis.
Yeah. Golf or tennis. Or kilts.
Right.
History is written by the winners, guys.
That's true.
That's so true. That's so true.
Curious. Well, let's go to the point where we have some crocodiles and alligators here.
Mm-hmm.
And Teehee.
Crocogators.
Did you notice that Kananga doesn't call him Teehee? He calls him Teehee throughout the entire movie.
Acting.
I didn't. I like that.
Teehee.
That's a fun choice.
Also, where does one order oil drums full of raw chicken?
You know what? I feel like there's gotta be a farm that also sells in bulk like that.
Probably. Two alligator
farms and
shark chummers.
Shark chummers, yeah.
Give me a drum of spoiled parts.
Do you think a shark into that? You throw a raw piece of chicken in the water?
Probably not. It's more bloody.
What is
chum usually? Like what
it's
is it?
Fish guts. Fish guts.
It's fish. Okay.
Yeah. Bloody. Yeah, it's fish. Like all the fish fowl that no one.
Okay.
Wants.
Yeah, that's probably more what sharks are into.
Mm-hmm.
They're chumming right now.
Did you have occasion to watch the outtakes this time, or are they just already in here? Of the
I've seen
Ross
him so
Kananga
many times.
Running across
Isn't that interesting? His name is Kananga. That sounds so much like an African name, but he's just this redheaded white guy down in the bayou named Ross Kananga.
And it was what came first?
Him.
Yeah, he did.
They shot at his alligator farm and then named the villain after him.
It's amazing.
Because Mr. Big is just the villain in the books.
When they were scouting or whatever.
Yeah.
They land on that name, so they changed it before they started shooting, right? But I think it's like Jakarta or something, or Jakarta, the original name.
Or you think of Gymkata.
What is
always
the movie Gymkata?
The original name of
Kananga. Before they changed it to Kananga.
Oh.
It was like Jakarta or something
like that. I don't remember. That'd be an interesting read again. I'm about ready to go through the Fleming books again, I think.
If you haven't, give the audiobook of this one a listen and feel deeply in your heart for Rory Kinnear trying to get through some of this book. It is really uncomfortable.
Really?
Yeah. He's doing these like 50s jive black voices. Yeah. And
Why make that choice? You don't have to do that. You don't have to do the voice.
But what if he made that choice before he got to that point in the book and like he's locked and he's...
There's a whole chapter of just what Bond is overhearing in a Harlem nightclub, and it is only quotes of... And the way that Fleming has typed it, forget it. There's no way to not sound racist when you're doing it.
I am using an Audible credit on this right now.
Do it. Yeah. There's they made I don't know if I agree with the choice in terms of like historical preservation, but they renamed Chapter 5 in this audiobook.
What was it before?
N-word heaven.
Oh.
What do they call it?
N-word Negro heaven.
Negro heaven.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Boy. Oh boy!
What a troubled
author and man.
Yeah, a troubled author and a troubled sort of like thing to outlook to reconcile with your love of Bond and the time.
Yeah,
you know, and the time
true.
That it was.
And online we're kind of like, well, I don't know about you guys, but we're kind of scolded for worshiping this franchise just for the things that the casual finger wagger knows about.
Yeah.
Like if they knew about the stuff in the Fleming books, holy cow.
Yeah, I know.
Of course.
And then I'm like, yeah, I walk around feeling guilty about it sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I don't know what to do.
I do feel like we enjoy this franchise, but with the understanding that it has these a horrible element to it. And in an academic sense, that is also part of why I enjoy it. Not because I like embrace this in any way, but I'm curious to see how culture has changed. And like Fleming had real problems. He has real problems as a person, as in views and an artist, and the movies do as well. And they're really worth talking about. And, but we also get backlash from people saying like, these are the way the films were, this was a different time. And I kind of want both parties to say that we're not like, it's a conversation really worth having. I really want to talk about the flaws of these films, not just in creative choices, but like in societal choices. And either way, like talking about it, I think is a good thing because nobody's endorsing these things. But for people to say that we shouldn't be talking about these things to give it a pass because it's from another era, it's not like we're really 100% coming down on it. But I find this stuff incredibly interesting that people saw things that way. And
sure.
You know,
like, and this franchise is singular in that way because what other IPs are floating around that have been sort of like under one, you know, company's umbrella for 55 years. And to see that sort of shift, and to see where they lag and to see where they jump ahead in some ways.
Yeah.
They got a lot of shit for having more, have a love scene with Rosie Carver.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, we can't play in the South. And Cubby Broccoli, who we were just kind of throwing shade at, to his credit, said, then we don't play in the South.
Right.
You know, they were, there's a weird push-pull happening across the whole of the franchise. And just from an anthropological point of view, it's really fascinating. And
yeah.
And that's what I continue to engage with.
And you can't deny that the franchise hasn't caught up to the times. If you look at Craig's films, like they really it's not like it's stuck back in the past, so it knows its knows its missteps, you know.
I think that the franchise has tried every decade to be in that decade as best it can,
you
know, to the, and it's very clear with you know, for instance, with this blaxploitation sort of genre that Bond has been thrown into, they're trying to keep up with the late 60s early 70s cinema vibe, right? So then in the 80s, you're like, well, what are movies like now? Let's give them License to Kill. Let's go dark, drugs, do that. Yeah. And then in the 90s, you're like, well, we need like a computer-driven Bond who like has this techno music that somehow... let's make M a female and have James Bond have to deal with that. And then in the mid-aughts, you're like, well, what is the franchise now? Well, you know, these Bourne movies are popular, but also, like, let's sort of, like, pull them back a little bit. Let's take them back to the beginning, and then they give us Craig. So I think that the franchise is much more, you can be much more critical of the franchise had it not evolved at all, and had it just continued to be doing movies that were set in the 50s, and just had this attitude of, like, you know.
It's even more interesting, I think, to look at the way Bond films handle women in the sense of, like, obviously hugely misogynist in the beginning. Now they kind of give their females some agency, but they still struggle a bit with, like, needing a damsel in distress, which is at odds with today's world as well. So even today's films, which I think they've, like, pretty much handled racism pretty well,
I
think there's still some troubling aspects, you know, like they get, like, Madeline Swann, she's a doctor, she's got station, she's got agency, but at the same time, I mean, she chooses to walk away, which is a strong choice, but she needs to be saved in the end.
Yeah, and but she also saves him.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying like it's right or wrong. It's just will Bond ever transcend needing to save his female? You know, like, that's an interesting sort of thing.
I would like to see Bond save a male.
But Quantum of Solace handles it really well, I think, with Camille, in that he kind of helps her out.
Down.
He does save her. She's freaking out because of the fire, but she's there on her own mission. I can't wait to watch that movie again. I'm really curious
for that one.
Yeah.
The weird thing about, you know, the female sort of aspect of that whole thing is that Craig, you know, aside from Lazenby, Craig is the only stretch where Bond ends the movie alone every time. until Spectre. And that's why everybody's so assuming that he has that Madeline Swann has to come back after Spectre. But if you look at Spectre as just an entry in the franchise, that's how every Bond movie ends.
Right. Very
him
true.
Driving away with a girl Same that you never Indy. See again.
Yeah. Very true.
And so that's why I'm sure that Boyle's going to lean into that end of
things. But he's never given Q a bottle of champagne.
That's true. That was new.
Yeah.
Or given Emma burner that only he calls her on. That's weird.
Let's talk. I want to discuss what, because we see a lot of gadgets in this film.
Right out of the gate.
But we see no Q.
Yeah, yeah. Weird.
It is a very interesting choice. I like to assume that Desmond Llewellyn was busy doing something, maybe some handwork out of town.
Hand modeling. Let me Google that.
I want to know why he's not in it. But also, I want to guess as to how big his hands were. During the making of this movie. Unless Matt, you can tell us what he was doing in 1973. What was Desmond Llewellyn up to?
Well, it's because his hands were so inflamed he couldn't shoot the film. He couldn't get through the door.
Yeah. he couldn't get a sleeve.
Yeah.
Someone sent us a Photoshop of him with those giant fake hands. And that was very funny. I imagine trying to get through a door like that.
Oh, according to a message board here.
This is where all the best information comes from.
Yes. He was busy with a TV series at the time, and Harry Saltzman didn't think it was necessary to have Q in the film.
Cubby would have been like...
Cubby would have waited.
We'll get him.
Also, remember Desmond's Q wasn't that popular in the early 70s? His fame with Bond came later? I don't know about that.
They burn him off fairly quickly in Honor Majesty's Secret Service, right? He's only in the pre-title sequence.
And at the wedding.
And the wedding.
Yeah.
It was more about them wanting to distance the new Roger Moore Bond from the Connery Bond. I could see that. I've heard that before.
I could see, sure.
Possibly.
Yeah.
He comes back in Golden Gun and they're all just shitty to him. Shut up, Q.
Yeah.
On that gadget tip, though, I know you're not buying my theory that the apartment scene is called back Inspector. But
I love your theory.
In the script of Spectre, he's also got a woman hiding in the bedroom. Who later turns out to be a Spectre mole, by the way.
When? In his apartment?
Yeah, when Moneypenny comes to see him.
No shit.
And I'll throw another thing on there. They reshot that scene. In the first version, he's wearing a bathrobe.
Powder blue?
No.
Well, it's like I'm not interested. Thing.
Well, Moore's is yellow.
Here's an interesting theory. I heard the guy who wrote the screenplay based it on the book, and there's no Q in it or any Fleming books. He didn't know that Q was supposed to be in every Bond film, so he added Q in The Man with the Golden Gun.
No.
People kept asking. I could see Tom Mankiewicz not that familiar, but you know Cubby and
I think
Saltzman
Mankiewicz
would've...
has spoken at length about the books. He knows what's up.
Yeah. But Q isn't in the books. That's the thing. Right. In that book.
The,
I don't know.
The gadget, the Rolex, the magnetic Rolex.
Yeah.
The markers go red. Much like they do in Spectre. When he activates.
Okay, all right. That I buy.
All right, okay.
Just like the bomb watch, I like it.
And then obviously there was that one sheet poster where he's wearing an outfit that he's not wearing in the film, but it is the Live and Let Die.
Yeah. Did we ever get to the bottom of that?
I'm sure it was just a cool throwback poster look. Yeah, he never does wear that.
But why do that?
I mean, he has a jacket
so cool.
over it.
That may be the only Bond
he
outfit
has the jacket
I
over
want
it
to really
in...
wear.
At the end of Spectre. That's the
outfit.
Is he wearing a turtleneck?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. Is the because he's got the brown leather holster in that
on the poster?
On the poster, yeah.
It's not put into use.
Yeah. It's not. There's
That's
no.
Not
is there
chamois,
a?
Huh?
Is there a? Is it's, there a Magnum in it?
No,
no.
He's got a PPK in his hand. In the
By the way, I love that gun. Yeah. When he shows up firing that Magnum and like does not care the fact that he would have to reload by now, like, and like the fact that everything just falls like you rarely do you see Bond. Lay waste so easily with one bullet.
Yeah.
But I do like that they're really going for it with the magnet, except for the one guy who comes at him with the sword and he shoots in the shoulder and then has to shoot the guy again.
But that's weird because he shoots him in the shoulder and he just recoils a little. And then that second one, he gets blown
second
back.
One lays him out.
Yeah. I feel like that's another thing they're going like, let's differentiate from Connery here. Let's give you a big American gun. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably in the culture, it was the after Dirty Harry.
Yeah, right.
So... Right. When he gives a whole speech about the fucking gun. So yeah people were thinking about that.
Yeah.
Harry.
How is this one of the Bond films that takes the place the most in the United States? Like, which one is the most? Goldfinger?
Well, you know what? Yeah, it depends if the island, if Kananga's island is part of the U.S. territories or not.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But this is, yeah, probably more than Goldfinger, because
License
Goldfinger
to kill,
starts
too.
In England and
the Alps.
Austria, yeah. Yeah.
But Florida, before it's got it Florida and Kentucky. License to Kill has a lot of Florida in it. View to a Kill has lots of San Francisco, but just at the end. This one's Harlem, New Orleans.
No, not just at the end. I think View to a Kill is it, right? Because when he goes to visit Zorn, his estate is like in
that's
Southern California, right?
Wait,
the whole, the whole, almost the whole.
No, Paris. That's France.
I thought he had it built.
No, that's Moonraker.
Oh God, sorry, I've got my
Lover's not Express.
I've got my Versailles like estates mixed up.
Sure,
I got another Glock for you guys.
And the Moonraker one he built in California.
Yes, but that's, he had imported.
So that movie has a lot of California in it too. I mean, there's a good scene and a half there, two scenes.
South America and stuff.
And then, of course, the whole middle of that movie takes place at the Venetian in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah.
The gondolas.
Yeah.
I have a gloft for you.
Let's hear it.
For some reason, Clifton James is padded in this movie.
Right.
He's not, apparently not as fat as they needed him to be, and he's just got these thick, you can see it when he kind of moves around. It's not like a human belly.
Mm.
Check it out. Also,
by the way, this is the movie though where we need Q, because I need someone to explain this shark pellet to me. I need someone to explain this.
Yeah, he said pull the pin at one point.
Balloon inducing pellet.
Do you have to prime that bullet before you put it in the gun, and that's what he does before he puts it in Kananga?
I think so.
Yeah.
That's weird.
But it's like, I just like, I would like a short 3 minutes, 2 minute scene.
A little bit of
Well, that's what you get in that exposition of this weapon. It's so interesting. Tell me what it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I just want him to do it. I want him to do it in the field. I want him to show up at the
standard issue shock guy.
At the ladies and gentlemen, like at that thing, like at that show. I want him to be there.
You know, now that I think about it, like that's literally a cue scene where he's like, tell me how it works.
Right.
And then they try it out on an assistant.
Yeah.
Who gets, you know, made a fool of.
Yeah.
That's
right
out of the cue scenes.
Yeah, I think that it would have been hilarious had he said, Mr. Bond, Mrs. Bond is already here. And he goes in and it's Desmond Llewellyn in a wig.
I would love that.
I can't disagree.
That. Listen here, 007.
But
I can't be putting
on
wigs
hands. when the boats go through the wedding in the bayou.
Yes.
And the bride cries.
Yeah.
Right at the end before they cut. The groom smiles like I like
you?
That like hell
Wouldn't
yeah
you?
I never noticed that before,
but like that's a fun director choice to be like, you love this boat situation.
Yeah
That's pretty fun.
What else we got? Let's see, boat chase and then big showdown.
Yes, okay. Now because there's also the saw blade. Like, there's so many gadgets. So many
it just
iconic Bond gadgets.
The most gadgets, considering that there's no Q. It might have the most gadgets of any Bond movie.
Who is he, Morse coding with his shoe brush?
The man who shares my hairbrush.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Shares my shoe brush, too.
That's a joke that's just for, Bond and us.
Hmm.
No, it's only for Bond. Like, that's it. Literally, he says that only for him.
Well, I think we're supposed to get it.
No, we're not there. We're not there.
That's
Wait,
who,
this what?
Is that's
like,
who he's asking.
I just feel like James Bond does so many jokes that are in, just like, if you're in the world of Bond.
What's the joke?
Shares a hairbrush. How is she supposed to know that the activation, this communicates with Coral?
Oh, I always took that to mean, first of all, is that a hairbrush?
Yes.
I feel like that's a shoe shining buff.
No, because when he checks into the hotel, he's SOSing somebody. He's Morse coding somebody.
Yes.
Oh, I always took this to mean that we are so close that we literally share a hairbrush. Like, I would let him borrow my hairbrush.
It's a callback to a confusing scene that happened earlier.
Yes.
Is that right? Whoa.
Yeah. Matt.
That's a hair...
You have
I guess
two
that
other lovers here who are
outboating
another lover.
Yeah, budding experts.
But is that...
But
are you sure that's not an expression?
My dad had hairbrushes.
Oh,
like
totally.
That. Like those, like, just like... It was the palm of your hand.
Or it looks like it's for a dog or a horse.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's an old expression.
You know what I bet? I guarantee you James Bond Lifestyle has that hairbrush.
Uh-huh.
A link to purchase that hairbrush. Boy, I hope they get click-through sales over there.
Did you look at that?
Isn't that a
today?
Thing? Because like a hairbrush was a hygiene
put out some new
thing.
Stuff, or is it...
You have to be close enough to share you.
No.
Google that term, and it will only come up in reference to Live and Let Die.
That is the first thing that comes up.
DB5 from 1964 is on sale.
God, how much?
They won't say. You have to contact the seller. And it like has a smokescreen thing, and yeah. Wow. It's tricked
Would
out.
I want that? Yes.
Yes.
I had to like, for a second, I was like, well, I'd never drive it anywhere. I'm like, yeah, I would drive it. I mean, sure. If it drives, I'd drive it.
There's another thing happening this weekend that you sent me that we talked about last week. So I'm going to force it into our conversation.
Let's do it.
Next episode.
Okay.
All right. When Kananga Balloon finally happens, never occurred to me before too, but everybody would be just covered with blood and flesh.
It's yeah. It's completely dry.
It's the driest explosion.
Ever.
Here's my grail for this movie. The native film footage of that explosion, because you can tell like there's a cut where they are blown up on a section of the film frame, or it's like the grain is the size of cornflakes. I would love to see what that looked like on set. Oh. Because they were cutting around some stuff in that film. And yeah, it is the least bloodiest human explosion
ever. Why did they do that? It just, maybe it looked really shitty.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
they were polishing a turret at that moment.
Because it's also clearly sped up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof.
Do you still firmly believe this is the worst moment in the franchise?
I certainly believe it's worse than the pigeon double take. Again, my defense.
I know.
That's intentional comedy. This is meant to be a hugely dramatic and climactic moment, and it takes all the piss out of it. Shouldn't he have been torn apart by sharks?
Okay, sure. But here's, again, my defense of Pigeon Double Take being crazier is that they had to sit there in the edit bay and make the decision to run it back three times.
Yeah.
And that John Glenn was like, this is going to be hilarious.
Coming on the heels of that damn
pigeon doesn't give a
hovercraft gondola.
Pigeon doesn't give a shit about this gondola.
No.
The pigeon doesn't care.
But it's a more egregious bad moment than the Kananga balloon.
I do, because I don't like the realm of possibility for me. Like, you, James Bond, we buy his gadgets, you know, as impossible as some of them may actually be, like to fit the mechanisms of a grappling hook.
I got no problem with the gadget.
Right. So, okay. But like, so I buy there's a world where James Bond has a gadget that does that. I buy that.
Let me ask you this. We can at least agree that both things take you out of the film a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So I would argue that it's more of a shock to be taken out of this moment, the climax and important ending of Live and Let Die, than it is to be taken out of the moment where Roger Moore's driving a gondola hovercraft through the streets of Venice and people are going, ooh.
Okay. Oh,
here's how I will agree with you.
Yeah. I will give you this. That moment, the Kananga balloon, is more detrimental to the film.
That's my whole point.
It is more detrimental to the film than the pigeon double take. However, I will say this. The pigeon double take is more batshit crazy to me.
Here's a very big distinction between the two. One is premeditated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if this was murder, that's first degree murder. And the Kananga balloon is manslaughter.
It's true. They didn't mean for it to be ridiculous.
On paper, the Kananga balloon was probably awesome.
Yeah.
And they just kind of like, this is as good as it's going to go. Harry, what do you want to do? He's like, fuck it. I'm out of here. Do what you want. Blow up the frame.
Whereas many opportunities.
Like, a lot of people got behind
this. I guarantee you someone said, what if they move their head a third time?
I can make an argument that Kananga balloon is premeditated. I know the effect being bad was not premeditated, but from an early stage, they had to see the thing happen in post-production where they're like, let's do this. It's a lark. They had to build, design, make a man inflate, shoot it, and then try to fix it in post. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of, that's a conspiracy, friends.
But let me ask you this.
It's a conspiracy to cover something up.
Yeah.
This is just
pure plotting to destroy the audience.
Well, where do you fall in, listeners? Hashtag Kananga balloon or hashtag pigeon double take. And Matt, how could they really voice their support?
Well, Matt, if they go to podswag.com and / that with a bonding, they will find a link to our store, which has, not only does it have beautiful posters that are signed by you and I, but it also has some t-shirts. One of them, of course, is the brand new Knick Knack Tabasco t-shirt available now. Ibrahim Mustafa did a great job designing that t-shirt. That's available. But if you really want to weigh in on this particular discussion, you have the opportunity to purchase either a Pigeon Double Take t-shirt or a Kananga Balloon t-shirt. Now, these are both images that are also available on that poster I mentioned earlier.
That's right.
So buckle up. And if you want to have a hidden Michael G. Wilson on your chest, there's only one way to do that, and that's with a Pigeon Double Take t-shirt, my friend.
Yeah, I think it's actually podswag/bond, just to be.
Does the
buckle
Michael
up,
G.
everybody.
Wilson.
It's podswag.com/bond.
Right.
Does Michael G. Wilson read on the shirt?
Yes.
Can you make him out?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's so tiny, but it's there.
All right. It's almost time to rate this film. Anything else you guys got?
Jane Seymour, great job.
Yeah. Jeffrey Holder, great job.
Jeffrey Holder, great job.
He's so good in this.
Mankiewicz said if he'd known that Holder was playing that character, he would have written more scenes for him, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
You know, like definitely recognizing that.
There's that one thing where he is overdubbed. I think it's when Bond, when they're walking in and he's in the show and he's just doing these like inaudible whispers between laugh punctuations and it's like, "Abut sekida bata." Yeah. But I'm not going to get it.
And then he does it again at the end when he's getting the sword.
Yeah.
He's like singing to himself. It's creepy.
I love it.
I love it.
Oh, he's so good.
On the blaxploitation tip, there was something interesting that I read where Harry and Cubby noticed that there was, in movie theaters at that time, there was a line of people going to see the white movies and a line of people going to see the black movies. And they said, what if we put them all in one line?
That's brilliant.
I thought it was beautiful. And beautiful.
Yeah.
It's kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
They had good intentions with
that.
This
on
movie.
The heels well, of the, like, make them this won't play in the South. Who cares? It won't play in the South.
Mm-hmm.
There's an argument. Who cares? They didn't want to make the most money. They're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Speaking of do the right
who
thing.
Else, you know who else did a great job? Bernard Lee did a great job being in this movie, even though he clearly didn't want to be there. I think this is the movie. This movie, he seems like he has no desire to be here.
That's right.
You know, I feel like when they start their performances, there's room for different things to happen. But by the time you get to like a sixth or seventh movies, your performance is kind of ossified into a certain thing. And he was just like, I don't like Bond. Yeah. You know, there's no nuance left.
Oh, that's sort of
it's
where he was
like,
coming at from. Yeah,
Bond annoys me.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, you know, something that kind of got boiled down from a lot more interesting interactions over the years.
That's true. That.
But I maintain, and I've always said that every Bond guy's first performance tends to be their best. And I think Roger Moore is super engaged and energetic here. I know you guys love his later stuff.
Yes, we do.
No, I think you're right. I think this is his best
performance.
That's probably true.
This is the most engaged you will see him.
Yeah, that is very interesting. You'd think like your sophomore or third effort would be where you really settle in.
They get comfortable. They get a little bored sometimes.
Certainly.
And that sort of feeds into the whole stereotype of Bond as this sort of like too cool for the room, unflappable guy.
Yeah.
But when you look at their eyes in each, like Dr. No, Casino Royale, this one, maybe not Lazenby's, but they're in there in a way that they kind of aren't ever again.
It's in the same way that Bond would be on a mission. Like they're staying alert because this is their first film and they've got to deliver.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. All right, let's rate this some bitch.
All right, we're rating this film on the James Bonding scale of 000 to a 007. We've given out no triple O's.
No triple O's.
We've given out a 00.5.
Have you done a 007?
No.
Me either.
What got a 0.5?
Well, we did Casino, the 1967 Casino Royale.
Right. Yeah. That was a great listen, by the
way. Yeah. It's real dumb.
I'm going to go 006. I love this movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's
in my top five.
I'm going to go probably, I was going to go a little less than that, but.
Well, you do you.
I know. I'm going to put it at a 005.5 for the absence of Desmond Llewellyn.
Boom.
No, that's this fair.
Phil is exactly correct.
Yeah, I was close to that myself. I understand it, but I'm glad I'm bringing the average up a
There's
little
a couple ways that I have to look at this, right? The rating system. Are we coming at this rating system as, the way I rate when I do the Star Trek podcast, the way I rate them is I go, it's 0 to 10, but the higher it gets is the more I'm likely to be flipping the channels, see it, and continue watching it through commercial breaks.
Sure.
That's like, once you get past, like, it's because it's 1 to 10, after a 5, I will stick through one commercial break and two, three, four, so on, so forth. So with this James
you're
Bond,
you're asking like, are we doing that? Like all of us had thought of that method.
Well, no, the James Bond one. I'm just explaining sort of my rating standpoint for this. So like a 3.5 is one that I will watch through one commercial break.
Yeah.
So when I'm talking a 5.5, guys, you're getting two, maybe three commercial breaks,
and then you turn
on TBS.
Oh, for me, it's purely how much I enjoy it. Not even if it's objectively a good or a bad film. It's just subjectively, personally, do
well,
I like it?
What did we give View to a Kill? Because we should have given that a 7.
Well, no, I think I gave it a 6 or a 6.5, something like that. But I mean, I do want to leave room for the best to be the best.
But quite frankly, I'm never, if I'm flipping the channels and View to a Kill is on, I'm watching nothing else that time.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Same.
Do you find yourself, like, if you happen upon something with commercials, you're not just going to put your iTunes
version
on?
I'll do that sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I always watch the commercial one, and I don't, like, without fail, and here's why. I feel like it's somehow more exciting. It's a shared experience. It's not to be missed. People in the world are watching it in the same time as me.
Wow.
And that somehow really has a draw for me.
Sure.
Like, if those movies are on TV, it feels like an event. It's still like the holdover from the ABC thing.
I guess here's a question for you guys, and we might not know this because we're not experts, we're lovers. But do they ever do the television cuts for these movies that have different scenes in them?
Added scenes or less?
It could be just different. Because sometimes when you watch Jaws with commercials, you'll have the music store scenes.
Yeah, Halloween reshot stuff for TV.
Yeah.
Aliens as well.
There's a legendary, and someone recreated it on YouTube. There's a legendary recut of On Her Majesty's Secret Service for television, and you guys should find that. I'll help you find it.
What's different about it?
I believe there's narration.
What?
Yeah, it's not good. It's
who does the narration?
Sean Connery.
I can't remember. I can't remember. I hate to leave you with like this not helpful.
No,
bit
it's
of
a
trivia.
Trail that our listeners can follow.
Yeah. You know what we should do? We should talk about it last week.
Yeah, let's talk about it last week. So listen to last week's episode.
So Matt, I picked Live and Let Die, which means it is your turn to choose a film.
I'm a little bit at a loss here because, let's see, we've only got one Connery left, Dr. Mm-hmm. No. We've got two Craigs, but we've spoken about those off mic a little bit, which leaves us just with Spy Who Loved Me and For Your Eyes Only in the Moore era, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like I want us to do another Moore to kind of even up Connery and Moore.
Yeah.
I'm going to go, I'm heading to Switzerland, and I like the theme of the snow. We're still a little bit in the colder part of the year. Let's go with For Your Eyes Only, because last time we saved that till the end. Let's get that one in now and enjoy some Lake Placid or whatever the hell.
I'm excited to just see some good, classy figure skating, guys.
Sure.
And skiing. And shooting. Skiing.
Where are they? In France? Where are they in that?
No, aren't they in Lake Placid? I feel like they're in an American...
Why did I say Lake Placid, too?
Probably because the Lake Placid Olympics.
I think they're somewhere in the Swiss Alps or something. Yeah, I don't think it's America.
What the fuck is that?
Guys.
Is it Belgium? No.
Lovers, not experts.
We'll find out.
Tune in next week to figure out if we know where they are. Yeah. Tune in 2 weeks.
Because James Bonding
will return.
James Bonding Podcast. 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 Matt and Podcast.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the Improv Fantasy Podcast, Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. 8 nights.
Rachel Bloom.
You all see my collection of men corpses and one woman.
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins is crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.